Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. This is number 989B. The B's are always the guest segment. We have a wonderful guest for you. And all the way from India, she's actually in the United States now, but she works both in India and the United States. Dr. Kohret Chaudhary is an integrative neurologist. We're going to find out what an integrative neurologist is in a few seconds. But she talks and has written a book called Sound Medicine, How the Use of the Ancient Science of Sound to Heal the Body and Mind. It's basically how to use that ancient science to heal the body and the mind, which is what she does. We, as usual, are brought to you by Persona Nutrition. Persona Nutrition is the ones who can personalize your supplements and nutrients based on your diet. You can go to PersonaNutrition.com, ask to speak to a nutritionist, or take the quiz that tells you what you're missing or not missing. Do you need more vitamin D? Do you need more magnesium? Do you need less of that? They will help you work that out at MyPersona.com. Dr. Chaudhary is an integrative neurologist who did her internship in internal medicine at UCLA, and then I assume went to a neurology residency at UC San Diego. But let's find out what an integrative neurologist is. Dr. Chaudhary, thanks very much for coming on and talking to us about sound, S-O-U-N-D, medicine, actually using sound, not that medicine is soundly evidence-based, but both are true in this case. So tell us, what is an integrative neurologist?
Thank you so much for that introduction, and I appreciate that you caught the play on words also. So an integrative neurologist, in my opinion, is how every neurologist should be practicing. Essentially, it's a neurologist that is looking at how diet, lifestyle, stress management is impacting the nervous system. You know, neurological conditions, unlike many other conditions, are oftentimes degenerative and they get worse and don't have any particular treatment that actually reverses the condition. So of all of the different disciplines, it's the one where I feel like we need to be doing our best to see what are the things that we can be coaching our patients in terms of the food that they're eating, in terms of stress management, to protect the nervous system once a diagnosis is made as a neurological disorder.
And Dr. Chaudhary, the process is doing that. How did you get involved in learning? Now, I know this, but and so you got involved in thinking about sound long before you started practicing medicine. But
I did.
How did you get involved in using sound in your own practice?
As I mentioned in the book, I started using sound personally when I started a mantra meditation technique at the age of 9 years because of my mom's influence. And then it wasn't though until I was a practicing neurologist and I developed migraine headaches and actually came back to some of the teachings that my mom had exposed me to in Ayurvedic medicine, which is a traditional medical system from India, that I began to really appreciate, you know, the mind-gut connection, the mind-body connection. And I realized that my own lapse in my meditation practice was negatively impacting my health. And so when I became the patient, when I was on the other side of the stethoscope, and I myself had to kind of go back to dealing with, you know, what were the causes of my migraine headaches, I then realized the powerful approach of using sound in the form of mantra meditation for relieving neurological conditions. And so then I began to introduce it to my patients as well.
Now, you used it for migraine, you said, your own migraines.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what were you specifically doing? Were you using a meditation or we're using a specific rhythm. In other words, sound is such a charged thing. You hear sound before the, if you will, the governor of Ohio has press conferences during the coronavirus, and he plays these upbeat marches, and you feel like you want to join him. So sound really evokes emotion in us and obviously changes the way our brain functions.
Exactly.
Is that, so how do you use that in treatment?
So we're wired for sound, and that sounds kind of both obvious on one level, but then surprising on another that we're not using sound as a biological tool if we're naturally wired for it. And that's why, you know, politicians, and you can think about, you know, the last movie you saw, the soundtrack is very carefully planned out so that you have that pivotal emotional response to what you're seeing. So we're wired for sound. Even on a biological level, we're starting to identify the structures around cells that actually pick up sound and change the biochemistry of the cell in response to it. The problem is that we're not using sound therapeutically in a conscious way. And we're just kind of being bombarded by ambient noise on a daily basis, but not actually looking at which frequencies are healing. And so, yes, the brain is certainly involved, and there's a mechanism called brain entrainment where the brain starts to actually resonate with the frequency that it's exposed to. But it goes way beyond just the impact that it has on the brain. And it's something that, you know, scientists are just beginning to look at, that every organ in our body actually has a sound that it produces. It has a resonant frequency. And if you understand that resonant frequency, what would damaged or diseased cells sound like? And is there a way to influence those cells to come back to their resonant frequency in a way that would alter the disease course? So it goes beyond just the impact that it has on the nervous system. And these are concepts that we're so new to this idea of this, that there is actually a science behind cell, that we're just barely developing the technologies that could actually change the way that we approach diseases.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how you got into the science of this. And I don't mean how you got into the, if you will, the doing this, because you explained that pretty darn well to us. What I'm saying is, when we think of sound, we think of our ears, and we also think of records and music. But tell us what happens when we listen. In other words, when we listen to something, what's really happening? Is it, in other words, we say it's sound waves, but how do those get transmitted to our brain into a neurotransmitter or a different state?
Well, let's broaden this just a little bit, if you don't mind. What we consider sound is just what the human ear picks up. But if you look at what, you know, a dog could pick up, it picks up frequencies that are beyond even what we're able to pick up. And so what we call sound is just this narrow level, you know, this narrow range of frequencies that the human ear can pick up. But what we're learning from quantum physics is that everything in creation is actually vibration. And some of those vibrations we can pick up as sound, and that gets transmitted then from our outer ear into nerve impulses that the brain then translates. But what about all of those frequencies that we're not hearing? In a sense, they're still sound, and our body is still picking them up, even though we're not hearing it. So sound is something very, very expansive. And it's something that we're essentially bathed in all the time, because it's a fundamental nature of life is vibration. That's what we now understand. And that's a concept that we're using in our technologies. It's the concepts that are necessary for us to even have cell phones, is understanding that everything is actually vibration. But we're not using these same concepts for our medical treatments.
You say we aren't using those concepts. More and more we're talking about, you being very well in the book Sound Medicine, and we're talking with Chaudhary, C-H-A-U-D-H-A-R-Y, who practices, and we'll find out where, but both in the United States and in India, and who's here talking about her book, Sound Medicine, How to Use the Ancient Science of Sound to Heal the Body and Mind. We're using ultrasound and laser, right, which are really vibrations. Is that right, or am I? Those are just different sound waves or different vibrations. Is my understanding correct?
Yes, they're different waves. Yes, so the ultrasound is a type of sound wave. Most of the lasers are types of light waves, which is another type of vibration, vibrational medicine. And, you know, lithotripsy is another example, which is used to help break up kidney stones. These are examples of inaudible sound waves that are used as medical tools, but we're really just kind of at the tip of the iceberg. There's so many other ways to explore the use of sound. This is an extremely, extremely limited approach. And these are the inaudible frequencies. We're just beginning to look at how audible frequencies can be therapeutic in conditions like anxiety, PTSD, even helping patients with Alzheimer's disease. And going beyond, you know, just music therapy, actually looking at how certain frequencies impact cellular biochemistry. That is going to be kind of the next step in sound medicine.
Now, my co-author on many of the books, Mehmet Oz, always said energy medicine was the next frontier.
Exactly.
And energy and sound are similar in many respects, right?
Well, the way that energy is transmitted is through waveforms, and sound is one of those waveforms. Light is another of those waveforms. And energy medicine is essentially embracing this new field of science called biofield science, which was a phrase that came out of the NIH, that is really embracing that we're not just bones and skin and muscle. And if we limit our view of the human body to just bone and skin and muscle, and we're not really acknowledging that we are also fields, we are fields of energy, and that is still part of being human. If we are not taking the fields of who we are, the energy fields of who we are, into consideration, we're practicing a very small fraction of the medical possibilities that we have available to us. So energy medicine is essentially just acknowledging what we already know. Every time we do an EEG, we're acknowledging that we're creating electromagnetic fields from the brain. Every time we do an EKG, we're doing the same, acknowledging electromagnetic fields from the heart, but we're not actually using those fields as therapies. And sound is one example of using an energy field as an actual medical tool.
Let me go and ask you a relatively personal question, if I can, Dr. Chaudhry, and tell me if you don't want to, but you're answer it. And don't worry about it. But I'm curious, how did you get to practice in India? You were an allopathic, a true physician, yeah, caring for patients in, I think, San Diego at Scripps. Yeah. And then you, all of a sudden, you move halfway around the world to India. How did that happen? How has it changed what you're doing? Did you go there to learn? Did you go there to teach? Did you go there just to expand?
Yes, to kind of all of the above. And I talk about this a little bit in the book, how it happened. I was essentially at the peak of my career here, both in terms of, you know, my practice, but also other opportunities I was being given to launch, companies around natural medicine. And in the midst of all of that, this opportunity came to study the Siddha medicine scripts. These are scripts that are over 8,000 years old. The information has been written in a language which is now extinct on palm leaves. And they have been some of the most guarded information in any medical lineage on the planet. And, you know, I don't know how to explain what it meant to me when I heard that I would have an opportunity to actually have access to them. I mean, you might as well talk about, you know, the Holy Grail or something that you do not think you're ever going to run across in your lifetime. And, you know, I had studied a little bit about the Siddhas and what they were able to capture. And I described them as quantum biologists. They were talking about, you know, subatomic particles 8,000 years ago. I just never imagined that I would be in a position as a Western trained physician, I think the only Western trained physician who has ever had this kind of intimacy with this information. So I went there because of having access to these medical records. I always describe it as Indiana Jones meeting Dr. Strange. That's kind of what my life feels like now. And as we are learning and uncovering the information there, and sound, by the way, is a huge part of their medical tradition, we're implementing the information that we're getting and using it at a center that is also there, and, you know, looking at what are the results when we are using sound, what are the results we're seeing, and also teaching. I'm teaching both the guests that are there, but also through these series of books. These books were inspired, and it's intended to be a series to bring out what I am finding there in this rural patch of India from these Siddha medicine texts. So that's what drew me there. It was just one of these once in a lifetime opportunities that I just, there was nothing that could compete with that in terms of my medical curiosity.
And I think the other, where in India is this? Is it northern India, southern India, east, west? I don't have a feel for it.
It's in South India, and I'm located in a very rural part of South India where we have all of these scripts. But even though it's in a rural part, we have created a world-class center where people have now been coming from every corner of the earth and experiencing, this extremely ancient medical system in real time.
And tell me how, now, you've been in the United States for a while with this book tour. The book, of course, and it's a wonderful book, is called Sound, S-O-U-N-D, Medicine, How to Use the Ancient Science of Sound to Heal the Body and Mind. And I can't help but wondering what your food choices are like, and how you're adjusting to the differences in food. Or have you been eating, in America, do you eat Indian food as well as in India? And the other part of this I can't help but find interesting is one of the things that we have a lot of sound with is the way our utensils are used for cooking, and our utensils are used for eating, whereas in India they don't use the same utensils or the same sounds, and I'm wondering how that affects our health.
Oh, that's great. Nobody has asked me about my diet in India. So I am actually Indian born, but I'm from North India. North and South India have completely different diets. And I'm adjusting very well because I'm eating the food that we have at the center, which is all fresh made, locally grown produce. You know, we have like vegetable dishes, and everything is cooked so that it optimizes digestion. So using, you know, the spices like turmeric, cumin, you know, fennel. So I've adjusted extremely well just because my belly is so happy with this, you know, fresh food. And I think food that you don't have to cook yourself always tastes better. So it's wonderful to have just so much fresh produce. And what really struck me was how different the produce tastes. Like everything tastes stronger when it's locally grown, and you just go and pick it up that morning and it's cooked, the same day. And in terms of, you know, utensils in India, you're right, they do eat with their hands. My husband has adjusted to that way better than I have. Now, in traditional India, they actually say that the that the position of your hands when they come together to eat stimulates digestion. So I always try to keep that in mind, but I can't keep the food from running down my elbow. So I'm not great at it when it's watery. My husband somehow has mastered the scoop, but I'm getting there. Give me another year and I'll be there.
Now, the sound must be different. The sounds of eating are different.
It's quieter. It's quieter. It's a lot quieter. And that's actually one of the emphases that we make at this center is we have particular times of eating in complete silence. And it's a very important thing to have silence in your life on a daily basis when you're eating and having a moment of silence for meditation. One of the most important sounds you can experience is silence, just the absence of sound.
Well, I am, as you can tell, as the listener can tell, I am absolutely fascinated by this conversation and the book, Sound Medicine, How to Use the Ancient Science of Sound to Heal the Body and Mind, Dr. Chaudhary, Chaudhary, is a physician who has mastered this. And obviously, I could go on for a whole mess of time because I think her knowledge of this area is so much greater than anyone I've ever talked to. So you can find out more about it with the book Sound Medicine. We did get to nutrition. I almost always get to nutrition because Persona Nutrition is our sponsor. If you're confused about vitamins, Persona experts and their nutritionists cut through the hype and confusion. You can go to personanutrition.com or mypersona, the way I do it, mypersona.com, and ask to talk to a nutritionist or take the free online assessment. Find out what can help you have a more perfect nutrition and live with a higher quality of life. But sound is another way you can help. And I guess the quietness, I've never listened to myself eating, but maybe I do make noise when I eat with the utensils. So I'm going to have to listen to that. I'll record it on the iPhone the next time. Dr. Chaudhary, thank you very much. And Luis, thank you for great engineering, but especially thank you, our listeners. This has been 989B. I guess when I get to 1,000, I should have a celebration sound that goes out on the web. But in any case, Dr. Chaudhary, thank you. Thank you, Luis. And thank you for downloading us. Do rate us. Do tell your friends about us. And thanks very much for doing so. And of course, we should thank Persona Nutrition for helping us do it.